Welcome to the Tough Talk Podcast, your weekly sports podcast rambling and debating all your favorite sports. Previews, recaps, predictions, and more. Only here at Tough Talk. Be sure to follow along on Twitter at Tough Talk Pod. Now, here are your hosts, Christian and Derek.
Hey, Christian, how's it going today?
Hey, Derek, how you doing? Welcome to Tough Talk, everyone. I'm obviously in a great mood after yesterday's game with the Bills just tearing it up on primetime and finally putting them on the map. So let's show some respect to that. We'll talk about that later, I'm sure. But yeah, welcome to Tough Talk. Let's get started.
All right, let's get into the first subject right away. The NBA East, we talked about it before the show. Not much has changed. It's the Bucks, the Celtics, the Heat, the Raptors, and the Sixers. And then the rest is kind of just a free-for-all down there at the bottom. I don't see much in the way of either of these or any of the teams at the bottom really progressing because the way they're playing right now. But I think the way the Celtics are playing right now, that team is scary right now. That's probably my scariest team out of the East right now, with the fact that Giannis, Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, all Pascal Siakam, Jimmy Butler, all over there being really good contenders. I still see the Celtics just as a really good team right now. If Gordon Hayward's able to come back later this season and be in the shape that he was when he left, oh, wow.
Right.
That's going to be scary to me.
Yeah, I like that Boston team. I really do. And Hayward definitely will be back. And it just all depends on what kind of style he'll be able to play. If he'll still be able to be 100%. And I think he'll be fine. I think this Boston team's going to make some noise this year. Miami was really nice. I really enjoyed what they did at the beginning of the season, but they've looked flat the last couple games, especially that game against Houston a few nights back. They looked flat. So hopefully they can fix that and move forward. I was really, really liking where I saw them at the beginning of the season, but they're starting to fall off a little bit, and I hope we don't see that in the future. Hope they can continue to stay in that top four talk. I'll tell you what, though, I'm really disappointed in the last few games, I guess you could say last few weeks, too. That's the Detroit Pistons. I was so high on them at the beginning of the season, but they just fell off. They really, they're sitting down at 6-12 now, sitting down at 11-12 in the Eastern Conference, and they're kind of disappointing. What do you think?
Yeah, I got to say, that team has a lot of potential, and it's not going anywhere. They brought in a really good ball-heavy point guard that will be able to distribute the ball to the big men they have in Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond. And I thought Derrick Rose would be the answer, but you got to have somebody other than Derrick Rose out there helping those guys too. Luke Kennard has been kind of hitting shots this year, but he's still highly inconsistent. They really need somebody to come through and be the answer for that team, and it's going to take Blake Griffin playing at an MVP level or Andre Drummond, because Andre Drummond is quietly playing at an MVP level this year.
Yeah, I really loved what Andre Drummond's done. I think he, like I said, at the beginning of the season, I thought he was playing MVP caliber. And I was really curious to see what would happen when Blake came back. And it's really not panned out so well. Derrick Rose is still, to me, in somewhat of a talks for most improved player, but he's fell off a little bit too. To me, it's probably sitting more towards some guy from the Western Conference we might be able to talk about later. But yeah, to me, Detroit's probably been the most disappointed team to me in the Eastern Conference so far.
One other person I want to throw in the most improved player category real quick that's going to kind of blow your mind. What Pascal is playing so good, he could win most improved back-to-back years. Last year he averaged like 18, now he's averaging like 24 a game. It's kind of crazy to see the fact that he just keeps progressing each year, and it's kind of cool to see. He's kind of just like we talked about, taking over the role since Kawhi left, and that's what they needed. All right,
That could be something you definitely could keep in talks. To me, I just feel like if you win most improved player one season, then I don't know how you can be improved again from that next year. If you're improved again from the season before, then you should be in MVP talks, in my opinion. I don't know if there's ever anyone who's won most improved player 2 years in a row. I don't know if that would even be considered a statistic. But Siakam has definitely been fantastic so far this year.
Well, the only reason I had heard it talked about is because the MVP race is so heavy this year already that they were saying that could be a possibility, and I just kind of thought that was intriguing. But let's go ahead and get into the NBA West. You got LeBron and AD and company looking really good out in L.A. It was a scary sight the other night, though, because it looked like AD was going to go down, And then come to find out it was just like a stinger to the elbow. But he looked like he was grabbing his collarbone. Had he been hurt grabbing his collarbone, we could be talking about what are the Lakers going to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee look good.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they would have helped if AD goes down.
No, that's true. I mean, if you look at Anthony Davis, the way that he has had issues with his shoulder, a lot of people were concerned that was the case. But, you know, thankfully, it looked like it was just a minor injury to the elbow. It got him back into the game. And he played phenomenal against the Pelicans there on his return back to New Orleans. 41 points. That's the most scored by any player in NBA history by a player returning to the team they played for ever. So, I mean, it was held by Danny Ainge and Stephon Marbury with 38 points, and he broke it with 41. He played impressive. He played great. And the Lakers just held on to that game. I think New Orleans actually lost that game. I don't think that was the Lakers' game to take for a win. I think that was actually a New Orleans game to lose with J.J. Redick missing that final three-point in the baseline. But the Lakers look fantastic, and they continue to look great. 16-2, they're shining in the Western Conference. And to be completely honest, I don't know if anybody's going to touch them for the whole season.
One of the teams that I think could really do it would be the Clippers, probably, or the Nuggets. Those two teams look really solid all around. I know there was a little speculation of how hurt Kawhi got the other night, but I don't think it's going to be super serious. I think that team is going to look good and keep looking good throughout everything. And they're a defensive team. That's a defensive-minded team first. It's led by a good defensive player, and then Paul George is the second good defensive player on that team. It's really fun to see. The other thing I was thinking about, though, is the fact that the Rockets still haven't had a meltdown.
It's not going to happen.
Michael Porter Jr., if he could show up for the Nuggets and show out like we've seen him do in high school, man, that team could be scary. And I know we're saying in high school here, but he was compared to Kevin Durant coming out his senior year, and then he had a back injury when he went to Missouri.
Yep.
And the one game he did play for Missouri in the playoffs, he wasn't healthy. He just wanted to play for his team. And he didn't look good, and he still hasn't looked good. It's almost concerning and making you wonder if they need to maybe take him down to the G League for a little bit, or just put him back on IR until he's feeling better, because he's not playing well right now. He's not playing at that level he could be playing at for them. But if they were to get him to be at that caliber of just give him 12 a night, and that team is beyond deadly at that point. That's what I got. That's what I really think about that team, honestly.
Yeah, when you look at that in consideration, I think G League would be a smart move for them. I mean, he's still young. I think that could help him get a little bit of room to grow. And, you know, I think that's the best bet, in my opinion. We talk about the Houston Rockets, we talk about that top four, but I mean, I want to keep talking about these disappointed teams, in my opinion. Obviously, we all know about Golden State and how disappointed they've been. But how about Greg Popovich's San Antonio Spurs? Those guys have struggled really bad, and they've been an issue for this entire season so far. Makes you wonder if DeMar DeRozan and Aldridge are enough for this team, or if they need to actually just take a step back and maybe rebuild.
I think it's time to rebuild, and I think that's the first time we've ever seen that in the Greg Popovich era. It's just the fact that these guys are a little bit older. He doesn't have the young talent around it like he thought he did. And some of the young talent he put a lot of stock into just aren't showing out yet, like Jakob Poeltl. It's people like that that are the reason. And I'm not trying to just put it on him, but I'm saying the people that they've missed on here recently, that's very un-Spur-like. That's not a Spurs thing to do. And for them to be missing, it's making you wonder maybe if somebody in the scouting department changed and now it's just Popovich is going to have to ride it out. The better question now is, does Popovich keep coaching in the NBA? Or does he try to retire here soon to save the legacy?
Yeah, that's a really good question, in my opinion, and we don't know. I mean, Popovich is... He doesn't really tell you what he's feeling to the media, so I don't think we're ever going to know that answer until it actually happens or until something leaks. But I don't feel like he's one of those players or one of those coaches, I'm sorry, that quits on something that's tough, though. So I don't think he'll do it just based on a legacy standpoint. But I hopefully that's not the case he gets pushed out of the situation. So I hope that there's a rebuild. If there is a rebuild, you know, maybe that's a time for him to move on and go somewhere else or just retire in general. just so he doesn't have to rebuild on his own unless he wants to be there, maybe take a front office approach. But San Antonio's, they're just looking rough. And it's unfortunate to see after moving on from someone like Kawhi Leonard, and then all of a sudden they're sitting at the bottom of the Western Conference. Obviously something they did not expect to happen with this Spurs squad.
I just thought I had an entertaining thought. I'm just going to throw it by you real quick. What if he does the Phil Jackson route of where he, you know, he takes a good team, he runs with that good team, and then he switches to another team and he tries to make another legacy with another team. I don't know if I see that necessarily with Popovich because he's a lifer, but yeah. I feel like he's a lifer at least. I thought he was going to retire when Tim Duncan retired. I was shocked he didn't. I thought that was going to be it. I thought the entire dynasty was just going to go off into the sunset together. But they didn't. And now he's like the last man back, you know?
That's true. It makes you think about it that, you know, maybe he will take that opportunity, that shot, that some other team. But hopefully he doesn't, in my opinion, because it didn't really work out too well. I mean, Phil Jackson, it worked well for him for the Bulls and the Lakers, but you really can't call him as a legacy in that standpoint. But when he went to the Knicks, it didn't work out too well, and that was towards the end of his career. And so hopefully Popovich does not do that. And I don't think he will because he's older. I think that if Popovich decides to move on from the Spurs, I think it's going to be him moving to a front office position or just out of basketball in general.
I'll tell you what, the New York Knicks, when that happened with Phil Jackson, that kind of, you just had to take it back and go, well, okay, well, what'd he do as a coach, not as a GM then at that point, too? Because it was really bad what happened in New York.
Yeah.
It was a debacle, and New York's still paying for it right now.
Sure.
Let's go ahead and get into the MVP talks, though. It's basically the same people up at the top of the league.
Certainly.
Everybody's doing really good right now. But Luka is standing out more than anybody else, in my personal opinion. He's second in assists and third in scoring right now.
Yep. Yeah, Luka's my number one for me. That's not changing.
Now, Giannis is up there in scoring, and he is third or fourth in rebounds this year. But Giannis is Giannis. He keeps doing that every year, year in and year out. And what happens is it's almost like the LeBron syndrome, if you think about it. LeBron did these great numbers year in, year out, year in, and year out, and would only be in MVP talks. Mm-hmm. If you just took away everything and didn't put a character or name to who was doing that every night in and out, you'd be like, oh yeah, he should be an MVP. And if you look at Giannis's numbers for the last like 3 years, it's like, oh yeah, he should be an MVP.
Yeah.
But it's almost like we're getting lulled to sleep with they're so good. We're like, well, of course they're up there. But who? What about this guy like Luka? Because he's just now doing good.
Yeah, no, that's true.
It's happened. It's been happening here recently in the NBA, and it started with the LeBron era of they're just so good that we just kind of, back burner because you've been so good for so long. Who else is doing really good this year? It's one of those things I don't know what I think about it, to be honest. I don't like it. It's almost like a popularity contest anymore and not just based on stats. I think they should take all the stats, put them on a piece of paper, no names, and just be like, vote. Take these candidates and vote.
Yeah, there is an aspect where the name is involved. There's no doubt about it. But Luka's been amazing. In my opinion, he's sitting at number one for me, how he's just improved so well from last season and now sitting third in scoring. And you said he's tearing it up everywhere else. LeBron is having a great season, though. I mean, you can't take that away from him. Even with, you know, having Anthony Davis knife in scoring, he's 12th in scoring. And then he's leading the entire league in assists with 11 assists per game, which is outstanding for LeBron James. So I will say that he deserves to be in the talks and not just his name in that aspect. But Giannis, yeah, he deserves to be in the talks too. And in my opinion, I still think Harden deserves to be up there. If you're the scoring champ right now, like if you're leading the league in points and you're leading it by a lot, which he still is, not as much as last week, but he's still about 6.5 points per game higher than the second place guy, who's Giannis now, he deserves to be in the talks. And that's probably the four that I would say that's up there for me, is Luka and Harden and Giannis and LeBron. And unfortunately, three of those names we hear all the time. So to me, it's a nice little fresh breath of air that we got Luka in the talks.
Absolutely, but that's the thing that worries me sometimes is when Giannis got his MVP, it was because he was a fresh breath of air, because he just came off of most improved, and then he came out with a better year. And like you just said earlier when we were discussing the fact that the Raptors, Pascal Siakam, he should be in the MVP talks with what we were just discussing earlier because he just came off his most improved. He's a fresh breath of air. Why don't we throw him in the talks too? I mean, he is scoring good. He is doing good. But the point I'm trying to make here is that the names we always just talk about sometimes just get lulled to sleep because of the new guy coming in and doing good and stunning everybody. And, I mean, with Giannis, he's consistently doing it. So could we see a back-to-back MVP? It's very possible. But I don't know. We'll see. I think Luka's going to get it because he's the new guy and he's fun to watch. Let's go ahead and get into the Rookie of the Year, though. The one I got to talk about right away is the guy that worries me because the Minnesota Timberwolves Sunday night have to play him. Ja Morant, he's averaging 19 points a game, 6 assists. He's already had a game winner. He's already getting comfortable with the league, and he's looking really good, and he has a good squad around him. Brandon Clark's also been really good, but he's not going to be in Rookie of the Year talks because he's only averaging like 10 points a game. But he's still doing good, and it's a rookie doing that. And he still have Jaren Jackson Jr. as well. That's a good, fun team to watch. They're young, but I think Ja Morant's kind of running away with Rookie of the Year right now. And the reason I say that is because Kendrick Nunn's dropped to 16.5 points. RJ Barrett's kind of just leveled off, and so has Rui as well. Rui, I know that's me and you's personal favorite in this race. I want to see him get it for sure. But I think that Ja Morant's kind of pulling away with it right now, and if he keeps averaging these kind of numbers, he'll have it for sure.
Yeah, another guy you didn't mention is Tyler Hero, and I think he deserves to still be in the race as well. It's really interesting to see two Miami Heat rookies sit in the top five in Rookie of the Year considerations, in my opinion. And those are the five that I would put in that conversation, and that's Rui, and that's RJ Barrett, the two guys from Miami, and Ja Morant. I think those guys, by far, the top five. You could put Eric Pascal in there, too. But
I was about to say Pascal. That was the one I was going to come back as a counter-argument with, was Pascal at five.
There you go. So, I mean, like, we're on the same. Yeah, we're on the same page there, just maybe the numbers sitting around. But, yeah, Ja Morant's running away with it, and that could very well continue to be throughout the entire season. Still excited to see if we ever see Zion Williamson, and if he does, what kind of second half he'll have, and if that'll even turn into a consideration for Rookie of the Year. I mean, we saw it in baseball this year for Rookie of the Year. Second halves of seasons changed the way that people thought about for voting, so I wonder if we'd see the same thing about NBA.
Absolutely. I just think it's kind of crazy, though, that we're even discussing. I know it's really early in the season to talk about Rookie of the Years, but I think it's so crazy that we're talking about him running away with it at this point because of how he's been performing lately. He's just been putting up better and better nights each and each outing. This week he's going to be facing, you know, a plethora of, you know, Jarrett Culver, Josh Okogie, Jeff Teague, and he's going to have all these guys on him. He's going to have to try to score on all those. Jarrett Culver is one of those guys. He's not in the Rookie of the Year talks, but he's going to quietly be a good player for the Minnesota Timberwolves for the next 5 to 7 years if they keep him around that long, because he's good defensive presence out there. He looks like he's got lulled to sleep on the offensive end so far, but I really like how he looks. If he had better offensive numbers, he would be in the talks right now too, because he's averaging like 10. But if he was averaging like 16, he would be in the talks too for sure because of his defensive numbers.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right, so next thing I want to talk about is the NBA DraftKings. I'm going to go ahead and talk about games tonight. There's two late games, so if you're watching this at 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock in Central, you'll be able to still get into them. The people I'm talking about are going to be Ish Smith and Isaiah Thomas. Ish is only 4,000 and Isaiah is 4,200. They've kind of been running back and forth. Like, they both have been averaging about 28 minutes apiece, so they both are pretty good. Danny Green, Washington's defense is really bad. However, he will see Rui Hachimura a little bit, but he's only 4,500. The other thing is start LeBron, because LeBron's probably going to have a triple-double tonight against the Washington Wizards. I was almost going to call them the Bullets for a minute. I almost called them a Bullets. The other guy I want to talk about, Thomas Bryant, he's leading the league in true field goal percentage, and I'm be honest with you, I don't even know what the heck that stat means, but he's only 6,200 on the market. David Bertans is only 5,100, and Dwight Howard is 3,900. Those would be the big men I would go with tonight if I was to be, like, honestly, I'd go through all three of those, and because big men get you better points. I'd go with those three, LeBron, and then build around that.
Yeah, I really like Ish Smith. Ish Smith is the guy that I would stick with. He's had some fun games for the Wizards, and I think that's a really great value pick.
Yeah, but it's so weird because they play him each about 25 to 28 minutes apiece. So you don't know which one's going to have the better night between him and Isaiah. And Isaiah is one of those guys, he can just still light it up on any given night, too. It's just kind of a point guard by committee, I guess, over there in Washington right now. I really thought they were going to do with more with Isaac Bonga, and now that Ish Smith and Isaiah are available, they're just like, bye, see ya. He's averaging back to like 6-7 minutes a game now. But yeah, it is what it is. Anybody else you want to talk about real quick?
I like that Ish Smith deal, but when you look at the Chicago Bulls-Portland Trailblazers game tonight too, don't rule out Coby White. He's had some great seasons, or a great part of the season so far, so I wouldn't rule out him in a rookie contention there. And if the value is right, Carmelo Anthony has played pretty well so far since being returning. I think that actually might raise his value a little bit because it's more of a hype pick, a popular pick. But if you can get it right and fit it into your lineup, I wouldn't avoid him. I'd play him.
He's in the 6,000 range. I want to say it was 6,800.
Yeah, that's iffy.
Yeah, he was the second most expensive small forward behind LeBron. I checked it out today, actually. And then Coby White, he's around 5,600 to 5,700, I do believe. And that's, like you said, that's a good pick. I like Coby White. Yeah. I like what he's doing. But he did have, I always check the last 10. He's had a couple of off games, and he's been kind of sporadic in the past few. So he may be one that he may get you 40 or he may get you 10. You don't know.
Yeah, the trends are important. So, I mean, when you look at it like that, that might be something you might want to. But I'm not afraid to take that one against Portland, though, because Portland has been shaky. But when you look at Melo's stats, the last games he's been in, his field goal percentage has been pretty impressive. I believe he was 9 for 13 the other night. And that's pretty good numbers for Melo. Usually when you think about him when he was on the Knicks, how he would shoot a lot and he really wouldn't make a lot. So now he's doing really well with his field goal percentage. He's getting better there. He's not that type of star that, you know, he doesn't have to be dependent on. He's more of a role player, although he's getting the minutes as a starter. So that's good. And I hope that continues for him. And it might be a value pick if you can fit him in there. Obviously, you know that it's a little higher in the salary. If you feel like you need a score, go for it.
All righty. You ready to get into on the ice?
Always, as always, man. Let's get started.
Here you go.
There has been some crazy stuff that just happened today in the NHL, and I'm glad it popped before we did our episode tonight. And that is Bill Peters for the Calgary Flames. He was, I wouldn't say forced to resign, but he decided to resign. More like a force, in my opinion. As head coach, there was a lot of racial comments that came out regarding Bill Peters, and he definitely stepped aside. It was a smart choice on his behalf. I think it was a whole thing as an organization deciding to go separate ways. Obviously, though, nowhere in sports for that, in any sports, especially the NHL, in this standpoint, because it's such a diverse community where they're finally starting to get more of different races and everything into the sport. It was more, you know, for the longest time, it was a white man sport. So it's glad that it's finally changing. You don't need that. You don't need that at all. Racism is just awful in general. And then you see this happen with a head coach, the guy who's supposed to lead your team. So I'm glad that they decided to move on from that. There's no need for that in any case whatsoever. And the Calgary Flames made the right decision moving forward. Now, when we take a look at the standings, as we always do here in the week, not much has changed, but we have seen a little bit of catch up in the Eastern Conference. The Washington Capitals still lead in the Eastern Conference with 39 points. However, they are tied for first now with the Boston Bruins. The Boston Bruins now have 39 points as well. Both of those guys lead their two divisions, but they are tied in the Eastern Conference. Sitting in the wild card spots, we have Carolina and Philadelphia at 31 points. So there's about an 8-point gap between those, the wild card and the division leaders in the Eastern Conference. There's a lot of good play so far in the NHL so far. Some of the most disappointing teams that have sat in the Eastern Conference as we get about a quarter way through the season is the Detroit Red Wings, who have honestly just been completely awful, only sitting at 17 points on the season, 7-17-2. They're in a rebuild, but I don't know how well they're doing it, in my opinion. And the New Jersey Devils, probably the most shocking team, have Jack Hughes, the number one draft pick from this year. PK Subban came over there and just not doing well as well. 22 points, as we said last week. Corey Schneider went on waivers for them. How the mighty have fallen, we talked about. And they still continue that way. So 22 points for them and 17 points for Detroit, as they say, at the bottom of the Eastern Conference. But Washington's still carrying it, but Boston is sneaking right behind it. I think we're going to have some great Eastern Conference matchups in the playoffs if we continue to see this moving forward. But we're only a quarter way through the season. A lot of hockey still to discuss. On that Western Conference side, St. Louis Blues, your St. Louis guys, are still leading the way with 35 points. Not as many points as the Eastern Conference. Definitely have some more powerhouse teams over in the East so far this year. And they're only 1 point leading in the entire Western Conference, as the Edmonton Oilers are still right on their tail. Connor McDavid having a great season so far, and he's really showing it. Finally looks like he'll get some playoff bids after having a few rough years starting his career off with the Edmonton Oilers, and they look fantastic. St. Louis and Washington, though, still sit as your number one on each side of the conference. We could see that Stanley Cup that we keep talking about if it continues this way. But, I'm really enjoying it. If you look at the bottom teams for the Western Conference, it's teams that you have seen for years in the playoffs, and they just haven't stepped out. It's kind of like the Eastern Conference, too. You see Detroit Red Wings, and you're like, man, they were great for years and years in the playoffs. And then you look over the Western Conference the same way. At 22 points sits the Los Angeles Kings. They have a lot of older guys on the squad, and they need to rebuild fast if they want to continue to be in some kind of competition. If not, they're going to sit in the basement for a while. And then the Minnesota Wild, where Minnesota and hockey just go in tandem, and it's just not working very well for them this season. So a couple of surprising teams up and down the spectrum when you look at hockey. But when you look at the top of the leaderboard, it's really stayed consistent. All right, back to you.
I'm really hoping that the Blues get to the Cup again. That would be nice to see. But I want to go ahead and give you the floor real quick and let you boast about what happened last night or what happened Thursday. You don't want to boast any about your Bills?
I'm sorry, you cut out. What'd you say?
I said you want to go ahead and boast a little bit about what happened Thursday night?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You want me to talk about the Buffalo Bills? Oh, certainly. Man, what a great game. And I'll tell you what, it's finally about time that the national media starts looking at the Buffalo Bills in a different light, in my opinion. We're 9-3 now. They look fantastic. Josh Allen put on a clinic against the Dallas Cowboys on Thanksgiving. He just played absolutely outstanding. That Buffalo defense was amazing. And look, how about Ed Oliver? Huh? Finally, that rookie finally showing some poise there. Two sacks on him, and that Buffalo defense was amazing. Dak Prescott and that Dallas Cowboys offense really didn't come out to play. I thought it was pretty hilarious after having someone like Tony Romo, Emmitt Smith, those guys up in the booth, and they were really playing that Dallas Cowboys that script pretty hard, and it just fell right on them as Buffalo just spoiled their Thanksgiving dinner and moved on to 9-3. And to me, I don't think you should stop calling them a middle of the pack team. They're a powerhouse in the AFC, and they deserve some respect, especially Josh Allen. Give this guy some respect. He's had a great season so far.
And the other thing about that right now is they have a chance to go into the lead in the AFC East, because the Pats got to play the Houston Texans this week, and Houston's got to be kind of mad about what happened to them last week. I still think they're trying to figure out where their offense is at, because it never found its way to play Baltimore. But I think the fact that Houston's going to be angry this week could possibly be a Pats loss and make it where the Bills are fighting for the division instead of just fighting for the wild card spot. But they're obviously going to be the 5 or the 1 between the Pats and maybe the 5 and the 2. I was about to say, because if the Ravens keep doing Baltimore, what they're doing. Yeah. And by the way, Baltimore, they're playing the Niners this week. But the Steelers still have a chance.
And they play Buffalo next week.
The Steelers have a chance to still steal the wild card spot from Oakland if Oakland falls apart.
Yeah.
And that's under a third string quarterback by Devlin Hodges.
Yep.
The Chiefs and the Raiders, they play each other this week. But Oakland's coming off such a bad loss to the Jets, I'm not sure what we're going to see on the field this week. I'm just hoping to see the Raiders win this game, because if they do, it's going to turn the entire tides of the AFC West. And maybe that'll be a game where they can talk about how good the Raiders are, like how they said they were middle of the pack too, which right now they are, but the defense plays very good. Let's go ahead and get into the NFC playoffs, though. San Francisco, like we just said, they're playing the Ravens this week. It's going to be their hardest matchup of the entire year. We both said that this team was going to lose last week to Seattle, or to, wasn't Seattle.
Green Bay.
Green Bay, thank you. And I took, and we both said they were going to lose that game. And then they came out and showed us that we just need to shut up when we talk about when they're going to win or lose a game. So I'm not going to give a prediction on who's going to win between the Niners and the Ravens, because that was a good one, you know, and when we get to that, well, I'm not doing it.
I'll do it. I'm not afraid.
I was about to say, the Packers got the Giants this week and the Vikings got the Seahawks.
Yep.
And that's, you're looking at easy schedule versus a tough schedule there. Daniel Jones is a wild card. He could throw for 3 or 4 touchdowns. He could also throw for 3 or 4 interceptions. We don't know. The Vikings-Seahawks game, that's going to be a killer one to watch, because it's just going to be good. The Saints, they won on Thursday, but right there at the end, they almost let the Falcons get back in it with two successful onside kicks in a row. Technically 3, but 1 got called back.
How crazy was that?
Oh, man. That kid, Koo, is definitely going to be is definitely going to be a good pickup for somebody this offseason.
Insane.
And then we got to talk about the Cowboys. They lost to the Bills.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. Imagine that. And I kind of thought that this was a trap game for the Bills, but I thought it was still very, very winnable for them. And they did exactly what they should do. And now it's up to the Eagles to have the easiest schedule for the rest of the season and try to take that spot from the Cowboys. They got Miami this week, and Miami's still trying to do something. They're just trying to lose. Let's be honest. If somebody does good, they take them out of the game. Did you see that, by the way? Can we talk about that?
What's that?
Fitzpatrick, leading him down the field, has a great drive. He comes back out the next drive, and it's like a minute and a half later. All of a sudden, they call him into the concussion protocol tent. For a hit he took on the last possession that they had scored on. So literally on a drive where they needed him to drive down the field and potentially win the game, he was on the sidelines instead in a concussion tent. And he was asking people when he's coming off the field. He's like, "Why am I coming off? Like, what's going on here?" So if you couldn't get more obvious with trying to lose games, Miami, I think that was kind of it right there. A lot of the national media was making fun of that. I think that happened 2 weeks ago. National media was just having a heyday with it. And I think it's just everybody's trying to tank. It was tank for Tua, but we don't know what's happening with him now.
Yeah, it's going to be for Burrow now, for sure. I think Burrow's the best quarterback in the NFL draft, in my opinion. I think Tua's going to be a value pick, though. I still think he's a first-round draft pick, in my opinion. And I think Miami is still going to go for him. Remember, they have 3 first-round draft picks. But I don't think they're going to have to use their first overall draft pick on him. I think they might be able to chase a guy like Chase Young and work and solidify their defense and then also still get 2. I think this actually works out in favor of Miami.
Do you know what this kind of reminds me of is when Teddy Bridgewater was slept on?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a great comparison.
Yeah. That's a good comparison for sure.
If Tua comes back from this injury, because the only time the only time I've ever really seen this was Bo Jackson, and Bo Jackson medically retired from both sports after that.
Right, but I don't know if you realize there was a couple of medical put on the tweets, and they were talking. They said, "Hey, this is nothing like the Bo Jackson injury. This is 30 years later. Bo Jackson was playing on this injury. Tua took care of it right away. The surgery was successful. They said that he's going to be fine. So there'll be obviously some rehab moving forward, but they say that he should be back to 100% soon. So that's a good sign. Obviously, we don't want to see that happen like Bo Jackson's injury. But like they said, 30 years ago, Bo Jackson didn't understand the extent of his injury. He played on it, and that's what made it worse. So I think that I think it's almost unfair for us to compare it to Bo Jackson. Obviously, that's just the only one we know how to compare it to. But I think that I think they're going to be fine moving forward. I think we're going to see 2 of the NFLs. But I think his value has dropped for sure because of the injury, not only his hip, but the ankle as well. And I think that he'll still be a first round pick. And I think Miami's going to still go for him. And I think it's going to be a value pick. I think it's only going to make their team better moving forward.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we weren't expecting to talk about the draft right there, but we definitely got into it talking about Miami. Let's go ahead and get into week 13. 49ers and the Ravens. We already talked about it. I'm not going to predict this game. I'm just going to say it's going to be a barn burner. Let me go ahead and just be that the typical non-colored commentator. It's a barn burner coming on. So you pick.
You got to give it. Come on, just give what you got.
Honestly,
yeah.
I think Lamar Jackson rushes for like 150, throws for like 250, and wins by 3 points.
3 points. That's fair. That's a fair assumption. The first thing that I have to say is this is crazy to me. This is a 1 o'clock game, that 1 o'clock Eastern. Now I understand that the games that we have that are already flexed are great games, but this could be potentially a Super Bowl matchup. The Niners and the Ravens here. The Ravens have won 7 straight games, and that's the longest active streak so far in the NFL. They've won 7 straight. San Francisco has been fantastic too. But it looks like Baltimore is arguably the best team in the NFL right now. We saw that last week. Both these guys blew out their opponents in primetime last week. So when you look at it, you want to take Baltimore. However, last week I told you that this is the first time I ever betted against the Niners, and they proved me wrong, and they blew out Green Bay. So because you're taking the Ravens, I'm taking the Niners. I can't count against them no more. Can't do it. So I've got that Niners game, and I believe I'll call 3-point win on that too. So you got Ravens, I got Niners. That go either way, but I got to stick with them. I can't do what I did last week to them. No way.
I'll tell you what, this is actually a really good week for football. I know you said you can't believe it's a 1 o'clock game, but let me just throw this out here to you. You're sitting at home, got you a nice 12-pack of your favorite beverage, and you kick back on the couch, and the first thing you see on the 1 o'clock game is you click on there, and you just get to watch the 49ers and the Ravens.
Yep.
All right, cool. Get up, go use the bathroom, grab you a sandwich, because, turkey just came out, so go grab you some turkey, throw it on the bread, throw you some little mayonnaise on there, come back, sit down, and then you're watching Oakland and Kansas City. And that's going to be a good game.
AFC and West?
Yeah, it's for the AFC West right now. So that's why it's going to be a great game. And it's going to be kind of having that energy because they are in Kansas City. But Oakland travels well. So if Oakland starts doing well, you'll know. And then the other thing is, like, you go to the night game and all of a sudden you're just like, oh, wow, we're watching Houston in New England. And it's just like, it's three great games on a Sunday, and you couldn't ask for three better. If people would talk about flex, why couldn't they flex these to Thanksgiving and got rid of the Thanksgiving games to Sundays?
Yeah,
because these would be better.
You got to always keep the Detroit Lions and the Dallas Cowboys on Thanksgiving. But I think that they could have easily moved that Saints-Falcons game to 1 o'clock, and you could have put the Baltimore Ravens-San Francisco game for the primetime game there. I think that would have been better. But, I agree. But, yeah, and then you got the Monday night game,
Yeah, and I was just about to get to that. Yeah, so I was just about to get to that. Absolutely. Great week of football, for sure. And if you're just a guy who just has, like, I'll be honest, when I watch, when I watch sports, I'm watching 4 or 5 games on the 1 o'clock games. I'm watching as many of the 3 o'clock games as I want to. And then I watch the Sunday night and the Monday night. This is a week you could be a basic cable guy and just sit there, like I said, with your favorite 12-pack of beverage and your cold turkey sandwich, and you have you a nice little Sunday snack, and it's going to be a good week for football for even just the average fan. The one game we didn't want to really discuss, I want to discuss real quick, is the Browns are going to Pittsburgh, and they're going to be playing the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, this may not mean a lot to a lot of people, but this is actually still a wild card implication, because if Oakland can botch the rest of the season, the Steelers could find themselves in the playoffs with a third string quarterback. Mm-hmm. And I can't think of anyone that's ever been done. Have you?
No, I can't think of one. I think maybe possibility of backups for sure, but I don't know about third string.
Yeah, third string is going deep. But anyway, we kind of overspent our time on the week 13 as we usually do. Let's go ahead and get into the award watch. I still got to say Kirk Cousins is up there. This week against Seattle will be a true testing of how good he could be for an MVP. The same goes for Russell Wilson because he's facing a really good defense that night, that day too. So that's going to be a game where you get to see two MVP candidates in it.
And you could say the same thing when you're talking about Lamar Jackson and that tough San Francisco 49ers defense. Lamar Jackson, in my opinion, is the front runner for MVP. And if he puts on a heyday against San Francisco's defense, in my opinion, that might solidify him as number one.
Jimmy Garoppolo should be in the talks, to be honest with you. I mean, he's not having the most productive year, but he's leading the best team in the NFL right now. Arguably the best team in the NFL right now.
Yeah, there's a couple good teams for sure, and that's one of them.
You talked about Lamar Jackson, and there's a few stats that I picked up and I'm going to throw at you. He has 2,400 yards passing, which is like 19th in the NFL. He has 24 touchdowns, which is tied for first with Russell Wilson. And he has 5 interceptions thrown. Pretty decent quarterback numbers, right?
Yeah.
How about we add on 876 yards rushing, which is 9th in the NFL, which means he's better than 2/3 of the NFL backs at rushing the ball.
Yeah, that's when he becomes the X factor right there. Not only does he throw the ball and he's, you know, at the top of the leaderboards there, he's in the top 10 in a different position. Yeah, absolutely incredible. He's an X factor, and that's why he deserves to be at the top in my book.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about Rookie of the Years real quick. I don't think much has changed in the way of everything. Jacobs is almost to 1,000 yards. He's 43 yards off a 1,000-yard season. Nick Bosa, he has 8 sacks now and an interception. Max Crosby, still right up there with 7.5 sacks. As a Raiders fan, I'm personally hoping for another 3 or 4 sack game for Max Crosby. Josh Jacobs to break out for another 500 yards in the rest of the season. I know that's a high, lofty goal, but something to just blow it out because somebody will try to vote Kyler Murray because he's a quarterback. But it would be great to be able to see the offensive and defensive Rookie of the Year come from the same team. I think that would be amazing. I think that would be, and I would love that because then we're moving to Vegas with the two Rookie of the Years and Derek Carr.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds really interesting. I just don't know if it'll happen in my opinion. I think Josh Jacobs, I think, is going to be the front runner and the stud and the guy that's going to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. But as much as I think Crosby could be in deserving of it, I don't know if anybody's going to touch Nick Bosa in this one.
Yeah, if Nick Bosa keeps producing the way he has, I don't think we can Crosby can touch him. But Crosby, he just had, he had 2.5 sacks, then he had a 4-sack game, and then he got a sack last week. So if he has another 3-4 sack game, that pushes him way over Bosa in the sack category, and then that's a whole different conversation. I know we were talking about Josh Allen as well. I haven't seen much of Josh Allen doing. I think that he had a sack last week, but I could be wrong on that. I could honestly be wrong on that. That Jacksonville team is a bad team, and I don't like watching bad teams. So
yeah, they're tough to watch, and you thought there was going to be some kind of change with Nick Foles coming back, but I mean, they played a really tough Tennessee team as well, which they're kind of resurrecting their season. I think the fact that they're expecting so much out of Foles here, it's hard after being, you know, coming off of that injury. We'll see what happens with them against Tampa Bay this year. But yeah, I agree, or this week, I should say. But yeah, I agree with you. I think that right now it comes down to Crosby and Bosa. I think Allen fell off. I think he moves to third place.
Absolutely. All right, so let's get into best bets real quick. And I'm just going to talk about 4 games that I think are going to be good ones real quick. The Colts and the Titans, it's a 1.5-point spread. So whichever team you think is going to win that, I'd go ahead and bet it because I don't think those two are going to go to a draw. I honestly, personally, I would take the Colts. I think the Colts are going to win this game. I know that Christian is very high on the Titans right now with Ryan Tannehill a spot. But I think the Colts are going to get this game.
That's good. I like that. I don't think I've ever heard that one.
Yeah, Tana fill a roster spot. Tampa Bay is another 1.5 game. Mm-hmm. That's, again, just whoever you think is going to win that game, just take that team because it's either going to be Nick Foles does amazing or Jameis Winston throws 5 freaking touchdowns because he's like leading the league in passing, but he's also leading the league in interceptions. So what are you going to do with that? The Rams, it's a 2.5-point game. I think the Rams are a no-brainer here, despite the fact that Jared Goff hasn't looked great all season. I still think it's a no-brainer. And then the other one is Minnesota and Seattle. I don't know who to bet on that, but it's a 3-point spread. So if you think it'll be a touchdown game or a 4-point game, take your team. I personally think Minnesota's going to win this game, but Seattle has that guy named Russell Wilson who just does things that people said they'd never seen before when Pat Mahomes did it. Yep. But whatever. Every time they'd be like, oh, Pat Mahomes, I've never seen somebody go across the field and then throw across their body. I'm like, Russell Wilson has been making a living of this in Seattle for the last 3 years. Get off his... But anyway, who do you got in the best bets?
I'm just going to take a crazy one for you. There's going to be one crazy one. A lot of people might call wild. I'm not even saying it's just got to be a win. But in my opinion, the way that the Carolina Panthers have been playing the last couple of weeks, it's been really disappointing. There's been a lot of coaching controversy, and we've seen some rough play from Kyle Allen. And they play the Washington Redskins, who are coming off their first win with Dwayne Haskins, and they also looked a little shaky. However, there's a 10-point spread in favor of Carolina, and I would take Washington with the points here. I think that they could, even if they don't win, I definitely think it'll be a lot less than 10 points, in my opinion. So I wouldn't be afraid to take that Redskins play. I think that's a good risk. You can make some good money off that one.
The one thing that does scare me about that is that Carolina has the 5th best wide receiver in the league right now, and he could just go off if Allen can give him the ball. That's actually a guy I watch a lot because he's just so entertaining to watch. I just watch him run routes and then watch how many times he's open and not noticed by Kyle Allen. It's kind of almost devastating. If I was a Panthers fan, I'd be devastated to watch that team. Because I literally just see DJ Moore getting open every single play. Let's go ahead and get into the fantasy football side of things, though. And DJ Moore is one of those guys that was a waiver wire pickup early on in the season. I talked about him on the show. I said that he was a good guy to pick up. Chris Godwin was another good guy at the beginning of the season for waiver wires. But let's be honest, everybody who's playing fantasy football right now, this is the last week, and we're going into playoffs. So the only thing you guys need to pay attention to now is matchups. And I can't help you with that. You got to do that yourself. It's pretty easy to do that on the internet. But so I'm going to talk about DraftKings instead. See if I can make you some money when you lost in your playoff woes because you listened to me on my fantasy football talks.
There you go.
Devlin Hodges for $5,100 this week, I think, is a steal. Cleveland's defense is just so hit or miss that he could easily be a very good quarterback to take this week for the price. And that's going to get you a low salary quarterback, which should give you more salary for the rest of the team. Another low salary guy this week is Derek Carr. They got him at $5,500 because they're facing the Chiefs. I think that's almost disrespectful, but whatever. Jonathan Williams, he's $5,300. Marlon Mack is still out. They're talking about Mack could be back by the end of the season, but that's not this week. So for $5,300, that's a good starting running back. Kareem Hunt seems to be finding the end zone pretty easily, and he's only $5,500 as well. James Washington, he was the favorite target of Mason Rudolph because they played together in college. His value is only $5,000. I think he could honestly be a steal. Devlin Hodges is a pretty good quarterback. Darren Waller, $5,500, going against the Chiefs. I think they love to give the middle of the field up, so I think that would be pretty easy to get for $5,500. Yep. Greg Olsen is the value tight end, in my opinion, because he's only $4,400 this week, and they're going against a pretty bad Washington defense. As far as defenses this week goes to buy, the cheapest one I saw for like the good deals was the Rams defense this week. They got a pretty weak matchup, and I think that defense will do wonders for you if you pick them up this week. What do you got to talk about?
Just a couple of wide receivers I really want to discuss, and one of them you hit, and that's Juju Smith-Schuster will not be playing. He's ruled out, so I definitely would get that $5,000 or $5,000 for the call. That's a great value pick. That one, I think, is almost a guarantee to put on your roster for sure. Another one due to injury is on the New York Giants. Golden Tate will not be playing, and no Will Ingram. So look for Sterling Shepard, who is just returning from injury, to maybe make a big impact for that game against the Packers. I like that pickup as well. And he's probably not expensive because he hasn't really showed up in the last few weeks due to injury. And then one more on the wide receiver side, and this is against New England Patriots, so a lot of questions might come up. But Stephon Gilmore will be putting a lot of pressure on Hopkins. So Will Fuller should have a great game. He had a great game last week, and then a couple weeks back, he had a game where that made Deshaun Watson throw over 5 touchdown passes. I think Will Fuller could really break out against this New England defense, and I think that that'll be a key to victory if Houston wants to win this one. So those are my three when he looks at wide receivers. And all of them should be pretty good value plays. Will Fuller are probably the most expensive out of the bunch, but don't be afraid to go and take a risk on one of those three.
All righty. Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of Tough Talk. Is there anything else you want to touch on real quick before we cut off? Did you hear me? I think we're having a technical issue. Is there anything else you want to say, Christian? I think we're having technical difficulties, so I'm going to go and just end it there.
Thanks for listening to the Tough Talk Podcast. Be sure to tune in every Friday as we break down all the major sports topics for the week. Don't forget to subscribe and follow on Twitter at Tough Talk Pod.